More sports talk, less static. Nashville's number one station for sports. 104.5 The Zone.
Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue with Paul Kuharski in Brentwood. I'm Jonathan Hutton in Murfreesboro. Pleased to be joined by Pro Football Hall of Fame General Manager Bill Polian. For the Bills, Panthers, and Colts, 5 Super Bowl appearances, 8 championship games, countless other accolades. And we always look forward to our annual chat with him, which normally takes place in Indianapolis at the Combine each year. Our paths did not cross this year, Paul. So because of our social distance show, this gave us an opportunity. And Bill Polian, nice enough to join us. Great to see you again. How are things?
They're fine, thank you. Thank God. Good. We don't have any illness problems, and our thoughts are with all the folks that have been afflicted. It's a terrible time.
Let's start with running back valuation. Curious where you stand on that. Obviously, a big story here in Nashville with Derrick Henry, who's meant so much to this team as he's developed and obviously carried them all the way to AFC Championship game as he got stronger and stronger as things went. He's got a franchise tag. He signed it. He doesn't seem that upset by it. They're talking about negotiating, but I suspect he'll be playing under it this year. Where do you stand on long-term deals for running backs, particularly one like him? He doesn't have that much tread on the tires, but he's not Christian McCaffrey either. And they drafted a guy in the third round who's probably going to be their third down back.
Well, you know, this is a difficult situation. First of all, I don't believe that running backs are devalued. I would draft one in the first round like Christian McCaffrey or your guy without batting an eye. So that's number one. Number two, the difficult part is doing the contract, because running backs do not have long careers. 6 years is about their shelf life. The exceptional ones go beyond that. The Hall of Famers go beyond that, but not many more. So, and it's a high injury position. So it's a high risk position. So the question is not do you pay the going rate for a quality running back, which your guy certainly is. There's absolutely no question that Derrick Henry is. And he's the engine that drives the offense. So it's not a question of money. It's a question of how long you're committing that money. And you saw the reverse side of that with the Rams situation, where Todd Gurley, of course, came out of college with an injury that was only going to get worse and needed to be managed. But they gave him a big contract, and now they're going to eat a significant portion of it. So it's a risk-reward situation for both sides. The player obviously wants as much guaranteed money as he can get, because he's going to have a short career. And the team wants to keep the amount of dead money at a minimum. But I have always taken a position with any owner that I work for, too, actually, that where the salary cap came into play, both in Carolina and Indianapolis, that when you do a free agent contract, and a player who's out of contract and franchised is clearly a free agent of some sort, you're going to have some dead money. Just live with it. You know, it's a fact of life. That's why the union fought as long and as hard and as vehemently as they did to get free agency. And free agency at 4 years was what they wanted. They got what they wanted. I was one of the negotiators, and we went up that hill, and George Young and I took plenty of bullets in the process for her. Of course, I'm not being, I shouldn't even joke about that. But the fact of the matter is that you're gonna pay money, which is earned, and you're going to have some dead money. That's the bottom line. Or you can choose to let the player go and go in another direction. It's really that simple.
Curious where you think over the course of your long storied career, what's maybe been the one way the game has evolved that surprised you the most?
Well, I think the salary cap changed everything, because now it puts time into the equation. How long is a player going to play at the level that he wants to be compensated? It's a simple equation, but it's difficult in practice because you're trying to predict how long a player is going to stay at his level. That's the biggest change. Previous to that, we did 2-year contracts, 3-year contracts. There was no long-term money at risk. Once free agency came in, there was long-term money at risk, and every owner can count. And every time the owner looks at the books and sees a player being paid who isn't there producing it, it makes him upset, no matter how rational he or she may be.
Bill Polian, our guest on the Midday 180, you were and are very process-driven. Who taught you the most about the model and the game philosophies that would define your career? Who do you start with?
Marv Levy, without question. I've often kidded, but there's a lot of truth to it. I learned everything I know about pro football from Marv Levy, and most things I learned about life. So he's the by far the biggest influence, and I would not be talking to you but for him. And but for what he did for me, not only as hiring me, but and bringing me along, promoting my career, but also teaching me all of the things that I learned. But I've also been around some smart people. My father, who was an Irish immigrant, used to say, "Bill, some people are stupid, but you abuse the privilege." And I found out when I reached adulthood that sadly he was right. So I figured, how do we work around this? How do we make this work? So I was able to fortunately surround myself and be exposed to really bright people like Paul Tagliabue, Bill Parcells. A lot of how I operate the football team as a general manager in terms of allocating finances, putting dollar value on players, dealing with issues like longevity, which are process driven. All those decisions are process driven. It's really a lot from Bill Parcells. I studied him and talked to him a lot about it. And he, of course, Bill Belichick is in the same exact situation, having worked for Bill for so long. But a lot of my theories and processes involving how you value players and how you construct the roster comes from Bill Parcells' approach.
Will you tell our listeners the story of what Peyton Manning told you as he was leaving the Colts facility on a pre-draft visit in 1998? He said that if you drafted him, he would bring you a championship. And you pick up the story from there, if you don't mind.
Well, he said, if you draft me, I promise you we'll win a championship. If you don't, I promise I'll come back and kick your butt. And he didn't say butt.
Yeah.
He used another colloquial term. And I wondered whether or not he meant it personally or professionally. I'm afraid, but although I might have given him a good front for his money personally, but obviously he meant it. He was serious and he kept his promise. Thank goodness.
Well, the way I remember it, Jim Mora, he knew Peyton through Archie, I believe, but you met him for the first time at the combine. And when he was making the rounds, you had a big binder. He had a big binder. He comes in for the 15-minute interval, opens up the binder, and then proceeds to interview the Colts. Am I exaggerating that?
Well, you're not. You're not at all. As a matter of fact, if you want to hear the whole story, let me shamelessly plug my podcast.
Oh, okay.
With Bill Polian, which is available on iTunes and other places right now. And that's the first episode, is the Peyton Manning story. But that's true. That's exactly right. After 20 minutes, the horn blew, and we looked at each other and said, "Holy mackerel, he interviewed us."
So he was taking meticulous notes about you.
Oh, yeah.
That's amazing.
That was a very accurate preview of what was to come.
As a GM, did you get more satisfaction? Both of these examples are excellent. Did you get more satisfaction out of stressing over the franchise quarterback decision between Manning and Leaf and not just getting it right, but getting the Hall of Famer? Or is there more accomplishment personally with finding the Jeff Saturday who was undrafted working at an appliance store and then he ends up playing 14 years for you?
It's a good question, but it flies in the face of the philosophy that I used to share with the scouts and everybody else in the organization. you can do marvelous things if you don't care who gets the credit. So the satisfaction is in winning and producing a winning team. That the you know, no one decision is more satisfying than another. What's satisfying is at the end of the day, putting together a group that can win.
How much do you think Phillip Rivers is rejuvenated in the new situation with an offensive line, unlike what he's had the last few years with the Chargers? Or how much has age caught up to him and he's not the same guy he was previously?
Well, first of all, history tells you when an elite player changes teams at the end of his career, he usually has a big spurt. Whether that's adrenaline-driven or psychologically, who knows? But the fact is that they do perform pretty much up to the old standard for a year or two in the new situation. Secondly, he's going, as you said, to an offensive line that's really outstanding. Third, he is very familiar with the offense. It'll be seamless transition because Frank Reich and Nick Sirianni were there with him in San Diego. Frank was the offensive coordinator. So that'll be a seamless transition, and I expect that barring injury, he'll play very well.
Better situation for success right now, Rivers in Indy because of those connections, or Brady in Tampa with the product of talent around him offensively?
Brady will not have the running game that Indianapolis will. So it's close, but I'd give the edge to Rivers because he's going to have that great offensive line and a great running game.
I think most people look at the skill positions and would say Tom Brady, but I'm with you that Rivers goes now with a top-tier offensive line, maybe the best, and he's got two running backs now, a young one coming in through the draft. So I think it's interesting.
What do you think about the Titans' sustainability? There was a heck of a season last year, but they lost a lot in Jack Conklin and Logan Ryan, in Dean Pease, maybe chief amongst them. Mike Vrabel hasn't come right out and said what the plan is there. We suspect he's going to be calling the defensive plays, which is a big transition for a young coach who hasn't done both things as a head coach and a play caller. Before, Ryan Tannehill was really, really good. I think it's reasonable to expect some sort of drop off. Derrick Henry coming off a huge workload for the first time. Do you expect them to be able to sustain it, or are you seeing some drop-off? The Colts have obviously gotten better. We don't know about Houston. What are you predicting for the Titans this year?
Well, if Derrick Henry stays healthy, I don't expect any drop-off from Tannehill. I think he played the way he can play. That's Tannehill. He took the Dolphins to the playoffs and then unfortunately got hurt. During the playoff game, if I remember correctly. So yeah, that was a great pickup by Robbie. I mean, he's going to play the way he plays. That's Ryan. The key is Derrick Henry and his ability to do what he did last year. I think it's reasonable to assume that he will. Conklin's more of a run player than a pass protector. So those are guys are easier to replace than an elite pass protector. And they got to get more out of the receiving core. I mean, I think that's the bottom line. If they can develop a really go-to guy in the receiving core who people have to identify and have to defend, then they're going to be even better offensively. Defensively, Dean will be a loss, but, you know, the system is the system. Mike knows it as well as Dean does. He can call it as well as Dean does if that's what he does. And so I don't think that's a big problem. And I think Crawford probably is a good addition for them. The key there is how much pass rush do they get in the nickel situation? And so you don't have to blitz. So you can play those complex coverages on the back end that New England is so good at and that the Titans became so good at.
Bill Polian, our guest on the Midday 180. I know the late Don Shula told you, you say taught you something a long time ago about taking a positive away from the negatives within the game or with any line of work or process of life, even if it's a loss in the Super Bowl. Was he telling you this during the Bills run of four straight? And how difficult is it for a sport and a position that you are in that is so goal-oriented and bottom line is hoist the trophy, to actually process and take some positives away from negative experiences?
Well, I mean, his point, yes, he was telling me that during the run, and yes, it's very difficult to do. I've also said, and truthfully so, that there is no loss professionally that you'll ever have in your life than worse than losing the Super Bowl. The only thing worse than that is a family or close friend's tragedy. Professionally, there's no worse loss. And it's very difficult to get over. And when you stop and think about it, you say, well, why is it so bad? Well, you're only this far from the mountaintop and you don't make it. It isn't so much the outside noise. Most of us can slough that aside if we've been around a while. It's your own feeling like, I was that close. What do we have to do to go that one more step? Well, you can't dwell on that. Don was 100% right. You can't dwell on that. You got to say to your team and your organization, look, we did it. We had a wonderful season. We had an exceptional season.
We've had many conversations. I've never told you this. I always meant to tell you that I lifted this from you. And I can't remember whose funeral or memorial service or what it was, but I saw you write or say, a quote Cicero, and say, good friends multiply joy and divide sorrow. And I have used that in sympathy cards and notes for my entire life since I saw you use that. And so it's just coming into my head again that I've always failed to tell you that I've lifted that from you. And I've found it comforting myself, and I've used it, and I hopefully it's comforted others when I've used it. And so I wanted to thank you for it. I don't know the story of how you came upon it, but – it's a great, great line.
Well, we both need to credit Cicero. It was a eulogy that I gave at Brandon Burlsworth's funeral. And I have a bunch of quotes that I've collected throughout my life that I keep. When I see a good quote or a good epigram, I keep it and put it in a file. And so when I was writing that, which was very difficult to do, even with a guy that you talked about satisfaction, you know, you do get some personal connection to players. And I had scouted Burlsworth for the whole year and seen him to play two or three times, talked to the coaches, hadn't talked to him prior to the draft, but really had a connection to him. And then when he came in and did as well as he did from moment one in minicamp, after the first practice, Howard Mudd, our offensive line coach, came over to me and said, he'll be there as a starter for the next 10 years. You know, you have a close connection. So when I was asked to speak and I wrote it, I really put a lot of time and effort into trying to find the right words. And that was the quote that I opened with, but we need to credit Cicero.
Pro Football really Hall of Famer Bill Polian has been our guest. Always great to catch up with you. Thank you so much for the time. We always leave wanting more, so I'm sure in 2021 we'll have another chat.
Stay well.
Thank you. Stay safe.